So I'm going to speak from Canto 3, Chapter 4, starting verse 19, 20, 21, and 22. These are verses spoken by Uddhava, just after Uddhava heard Krishna speaking Uddhava Gita, after which Krishna left, letting Uddhava know, you won't be seeing me again. He summarizes that earlier in chapter 2, when Vidura first arrives in a remote place in a forest in Vrindavan, Vidura has been on pilgrimage since the time that he left Hastinapur, gauging by the time Yudhisthira is still on the throne, Dhritarashtra leaves home, that chapter 19, which is chapter 13 from the first canto. The time lapse from when the battle of Kurukshetra began to this time when Krishna leaves the planet. 34 years Vidura has been on pilgrimage, and he sees Uddhava, and very enthusiastically he approaches Uddhava. How wonderful to find you in the forest. I didn't see you in Dwarka, and here you are. Tell me, how is Krishna? How is Balaram? And all the one by one naming the residents of Dwarka, because by seeing Uddhava, he immediately thinks of Krishna, because Uddhava is so intimately connected with Krishna. Like as soon as you see Arjuna, you think of Krishna. Even more so, practically, Uddhava. Outside of Vrindavan, it is said that Uddhava is the most intimate associate of Krishna, most elevated in rasa, and most elevated in knowledge, and most elevated in intimacy. He had direct experience by Krishna's arrangement of the love of the residents of Vrindavan. Krishna wanted him to experience that, to show how elevated is that love of the residents of Vrindavan, why he was so attracted to Vrindavan, and the residents of Vrindavan, is the intensity of their love and the quality of their love. So when Uddhava finishes, Vidura finishes asking his questions about Yadus and Krishna and Balaram, Uddhava loses external consciousness. His body is still in front of Vidura, but his consciousness has gone to Krishna. The verse and the purport say he's with Krishna. And this is the position of a pure devotee like Uddhava. On the physical plane, they may be doing things. In this case, he stopped doing things, but their consciousness is with Krishna. He was in Vaikuntha, and he came, descended from Vaikuntha to the physical plane to respond to Vidura's questions, because he wanted to serve Uncle Vidura. And he speaks about, first he speaks about sympathy, because he knows, although Vidura hasn't said it, he knows that from the mood of Vidura, that Vidura has an understanding that the Yadu dynasty has gone. So he's sympathizing with his mood and saying, both of us are now, just like through the passage of time the sun sets and all this darkness, Krishna is gone. Through inexorable time, we're not going to see him again. And how, what greater misfortune can there be than that? Then he expands it to the whole universe, because Krishna has gone to another universe. The whole universe is unfortunate. Then his thoughts go to the Yadu dynasty. And he says, the Yadu dynasty, when present with Krishna, they would sit intimately with him, converse with him, associate with him, socialize with him. But they understood him to be the super soul manifest amongst them. And how, what a great misfortune. They didn't understand him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like he's known in, by us, as residing in Vrindavan and exhibiting the wonderful opulence of sweetness in Vrindavan, that they didn't have an understanding. How unfortunate. And he goes on expressing his mood of unhappiness in various wonderful ways, poetic ways, of how Krishna exhibited pastimes as if he was ordinary, and because of that people take him as ordinary. It brings me great pain. When Krishna requested Vasudev to take him to the other side of the Jamuna River, he did on the pretext that he was afraid of Kamsa. And this gives me great pain. And then he came back for the bow festival. And after killing Kamsa, dragging him across the wrestling arena by his hair so everyone could see he was dead, he went to see Vasudeva and Devaki and offered his apologies. I'm sorry, for 11 years I was not with you because I was afraid of Kamsa. And this gives me great pain. The pastimes are wonderful. He's relishing the pastimes. But his mood is in another realm. His mood is wishing, in a benedictory way, wishing that others could experience that happiness of love. And it gives him great pain to see that they don't. Something very similar, just in a different, expressed in a different way, in a different mellow of love, that Prahlad Maharaj speaks. I have no difficulty. I just remember you and everything is fine. But what gives me trouble is the foolish people of this world that are without you. So don't ask me to go back to the spiritual world without these foolish people. Please deliver them. Well, like Prahlad Maharaj's prayer, Uddhava is expressing in an even more exalted way some similar wish for those who don't know who Krishna really is, that they could somehow get Krishna's mercy and understand who Krishna really is and become truly happy. And without this, gives me great pain. So he continues the chapter, he goes on for 2.5 chapters, just verse after verse, just speaking about Krishna. That's what Vidura gets for asking Uddhava about Krishna. He just keeps going and going and going, and it's a synopsis of the 10th canto. He gives the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, and then he, as synopsis, gives the pastimes of Krishna out of Vrindavan, chronologically, just recounting his thoughts of Krishna. And then the fourth chapter begins with Vidura becoming a little more tuned into external consciousness than just his absorption of thought of Krishna. And he's now addressing other questions that that Vidura is asking. Let me read some of the verses. They're very nice. Yeah. Uddhava mentions that Krishna had told him that he was planning to leave, please go to be with Naranarayan Rishi and the devotees there in Badrinath, because after I leave things will become very difficult. So he tried to go. He didn't want to go, but Krishna had told him. He didn't want to say no to Krishna, so he tried to go, but he couldn't bear Krishna's separation. So he then went back to Dwarka. Krishna had left Dwarka. He went searching for Krishna, and then found Krishna. And as he was crying and weeping and falling at Krishna's feet and so happy to see him, knowing that he was still going, it was, you know, pleasure, it was joy and anticipation of great sorrow at the same moment. And Maitreya came to that very spot. And Maitreya was not on the same level of spiritualization as was Uddhava. Mainly just his intimacy with Krishna. He was a great yogi, he was a great scholar. He was so elevated, he was a friend of Vyasadeva. Can you imagine being a friend of Vyasadeva? Hard to imagine. Maitreya was very elevated, but less elevated than Uddhava. So Maitreya just happened, by providential arrangement, to also come at the same place where Krishna and Uddhava were meeting, and that he heard Uddhava Gita. Maitreya, in the course of that, Maitreya was something of a devotee for sure, and in the course of hearing Uddhava Gita, he became completely attached to Krishna also. Krishna spoke as follows. O Vaso, I know from within your mind what you desired in the days of yore when the Vasus and the other demigods responsible for expanding the universal affairs performed sacrifices. You particularly desire to achieve my association. This is very difficult to obtain for others, but I award it unto you. O honest one, your present life is the last and supermost, because in this term of life you have been awarded my ultimate favor. Now you can go to my transcendental abode by Kunta. By leaving this universe of conditioned living entities, your visit to me in this lonely place, because of your pure love and unflinching devotional service, is a great boon for you, O Uddhava. In the lotus millennium in the days of yore, at the beginning of the creation, I spoke unto Brahma, who is situated on the lotus that grows out of my navel, about transcendental knowledge of my glories, which the great sages describe as Srimad Bhagavatam. Uddhava said, "O Vidura, when I was thus favored at every moment by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and addressed by Him with great affection, my words failed in tears, and the hairs on my body erupted. After smearing my eyes, I, with folded hands, spoke like this: O my Lord, for devotees who engage in the transcendental loving service of your lotus feet have no difficulty in achieving anything within the realm of the four principles of religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. But, O Great One, as far as I am concerned, I have preferred only to engage in the loving service of your lotus feet." My Lord, even the learned sages become disturbed in their intelligence when they see that your greatness engages in fruitive work, although you are free from all desires, and that you take a birth, although you are unborn, that you flee out of fear of the enemy and take shelter in a fort, although you are the controller of the inconceivable time, and that you enjoy householder life surrounded by many women, although you enjoy in yourself. These are things that he said earlier to Vidura, and now he's saying them again to the Lord. It's he behaves as if he's one of us, and this gives him great pain, again, because people think he's one of us, and we can become him, or as good as him. And the pain is not just that they've got it wrong, but they'll miss the real happiness of life, the real purpose of life. This gives me great pain. Oh my Lord, your eternal self is never divided by the influence of time, and there is no limitation to your perfect knowledge. Thus, you are sufficiently able to consult with yourself. But you called upon me for consultation, as if bewildered, although you are never bewildered. And this act of yours bewilders me. I mean, he understands it. And out of affection, he understands why Krishna is doing. But it's something like in the first canto, Queen Kunti speaking about Krishna's coming and touching her feet, and his offering respect to her is something that bewilders her, because she sees him as the personality of Godhead, super soul. The super soul is coming to touch her feet and offer her respects. What to speak of Mother Jasoda, who also has motherly affection, and unlike her, Queen Kunti, who sees Krishna as super soul, Mother Jasoda just sees her beloved child and comes chasing him with a stick in her hand, and Krishna cries. Not pretentious tears, but he cries in fear of the stick, little stick, in the hand of Mother Jasoda. So she throws away the stick. She doesn't want to see Krishna cry. This is bewildering. So Kunti can understand, and Uddhava can understand, because of their exalted character. Still, they're saying, "It bewilders me." My Lord, kindly explain to us, if you think us competent to receive it, that transcendental knowledge which gives enlightenment about yourself and which you explained before to Brahmaji, because Krishna has just said, just before, he spoke transcendental knowledge. So in a very expert way, and a very affectionate way, in a very elevated way, Uddhava is asking Krishna to impart transcendental knowledge. So he does. He speaks Uddhava Gita. But that's not recorded in the third canto. It's recorded in the 11th canto. So stay tuned. So those are just background verses up to the ones that we're going to focus on here. Text 19 through 22. This is Uddhava speaking. Before Uddhava was speaking to Vidura, what he said to Krishna. Now he's just speaking to Vidura, what happened after that. I'm just going to read 19 through 22, and then we'll discuss a little. Text 19. When I thus expressed my heartfelt desires unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lotus-Eyed Lord instructed me about His transcendental situation. Purport. The words Paramam Stitim are significant in this verse. The Lord's transcendental situation, Paramam Stitim, was not even spoken of to Brahma when the four verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Chaturshloki verses, were explained. This transcendental situation comprises His dealings with devotees engaged in transcendental loving service as exhibited at Dwarka and Vrindavan. When the Lord explained His specific transcendental situation, it was meant for Uddhava only, and therefore Uddhava particularly said, Mayam, or unto me, although the great sage Maitreya was also sitting there. Such a transcendental situation is hardly understood by those whose devotion is mixed with speculative knowledge or fruitive activities. The Lord's activities in confidential love are very rarely disclosed to the general devotees or attracted by devotion mixed with knowledge and mysticism. Such activities are the inconceivable pastimes of the Lord. Text 20. I have studied the path of understanding self-knowledge from my spiritual master, the Personality of Godhead, and thus, after circumambulating Him, I have come to this place very much aggrieved due to separation. And the nice long purport here, text 20. Sri Uddhava's actual life is the direct symbol of the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam enunciated first to Brahmaji by the Personality of Godhead. These four very great and important verses from Srimad Bhagavatam are particularly taken out by the Mayavad speculators, who construe a different purport to suit their impersonal view of monism. Here is the proper answer to such unauthorized speculators. The verses of Srimad Bhagavatam are purely theistic science, understandable by the postgraduate students of Bhagavad Gita. The unauthorized, dry speculators are offenders at the lotus feet of Sri Krishna because they distort the purports of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam to mislead the public and prepare a direct path to hell known as Antatamishra. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 16:20, such envious speculators are without knowledge and are surely condemned life after life. They unnecessarily take shelter of Sripad Shankaracharya, but he was not so drastic as to commit an offense at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Actually, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sripad Shankaracharya, according to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sripad Shankaracharya preached the Madhivad philosophy for a particular purpose. Such a philosophy was necessary to defeat the Buddhist philosophy of non-existence of the spirit soul. But it was never meant for perpetual acceptance. It was an emergency. Thus, Lord Krishna was accepted by Shankaracharya as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his commentation on Bhagavad Gita. Since he was a great devotee of Lord Krishna, he did not dare write any commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, because that would have been a direct offense at the lotus feet of the Lord. But later, speculators in the name of Mayavad philosophy unnecessarily make their commentary on the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam without any bona fide intent. That's an interesting clarification. Several of them. Paragraph. Though the monistic dry speculators have no business in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but because this particular Vedic literature is forbidden for them by the great author himself, Srila Vyasadeva is definitely forbidden persons engaged in religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and finally salvation from trying to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, which is not meant for them. Sripad Sridhar Swami, the great commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam, has definitely forbidden the salvationists or monists to deal in Srimad Bhagavatam. It is not for them. Yet, such unauthorized persons perversely try to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, and thus they commit offenses at the feet of the Lord, which even Sripad Shankaracharya dared not do. Thus, they prepare for their continuation of miserable life. It should be particularly noted herein that Uddhava studied the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam directly from the Lord, who spoke them first to Brahmaji, and this time the Lord explained more confidentially the self-knowledge mentioned as Paramam Stitim. Upon learning such self-knowledge of love, Uddhava felt very much aggrieved by feelings of separation from the Lord. Unless one is awakened to the stage of Uddhava, everlastingly feeling separation of the Lord in transcendental love, as exhibited by Lord Chaitanya also, one cannot understand the real import of these four essential verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. One should not indulge in the unauthorized act of twisting the meaning and thereby putting himself on the dangerous path of offense. End of purport. That's the main message. There's these two short verses that just conclude what Uddhava says to Vidura. Text 21, My dear Vidura, now I am mad for want of the pleasure of seeing him, and just to mitigate this, I am now proceeding to Bhadrikashram in the Himalayas for association, as I have been instructed by him. Purport, a pure devotee of the Lord, of the standard of Uddhava, constantly associates with the Lord in the double perception of simultaneous separation and meeting. The pure devotee is not for a moment unengaged in the transcendental service of the Lord. Execution of the Lord's service is the main occupation of the pure devotee. Uddhava's separation from the Lord was unbearable, and therefore he started to Bhadrikashram in obedience to the Lord's order, because The order of the Lord and the Lord himself are identical. As long as one is engaged in the execution of the order of the Lord, there is no factual separation from him. And text 22. There, in Bhadrikashram, the personality of Godhead in his incarnation as the sages Nara and Narayana has been undergoing great penance since time immemorial for the welfare of all amiable living entities. Purport. Bhadrikashram, in the Himalayas, the abode of Nara Narayan sages, is a great place of pilgrimage for the Hindus. Even up to the present, hundreds and thousands of pious Hindus go to pay respect to the incarnation of Godhead Nara Narayana. It appears that even 5,000 years ago, this holy place was being visited by such holy being as Uddhava. And even at that time, the place was known to be very, very old. This particular pilgrimage site is very difficult to visit for ordinary men because of its difficult situation in the Himalayas, in a place which is covered by ice almost all year. A few months during the summer season, people can visit this place at great personal inconvenience. Therefore, dhammas, or kingdoms of God, which represent the planets of the spiritual sky, which consists of the Brahmajyoti and the Vaikunthas, these are Bhadrikashram, Rameshwaram, Jagannath Puri, and Dwarka. Faithful Hindus still visit all these holy places for perfection of spiritual realization, following in the footsteps of devotees like Uddhava. And that's... And Shukadeva Goswami just starts speaking to Maharaj Pariksit again. So very early on in the Bhagavatam, here in the third canto, of course it starts even in the first canto, and then again the second canto, then here again the third canto, but the topics of the nature of love on the spiritual plane, the love of exalted devotees and how they express that love and how they experience that. Here it's Uddhava directly expressing to the personality of Godhead in very beautiful language. His desire in hearing the description of the Chaturshloki verses is not scholastic. It's not intellectual stimulation. Specifically, he says he wants to understand these apparently contradictory things more deeply, and that way understand the Lord's actual situation. It's to enrich his mood of love, nurture the mood of love. And what Uddhava says is that Krishna agreed, and he expressed in such a way that even what was expressed to Brahma, at least that's what's presented here in the purport, Paramams to Tim, what was expressed to Uddhava was the same knowledge as what Brahma heard, but there's an additional dimension. The nature of his dealings in Dwaraka and in Vrindavan, which Uddhava had experienced Krishna in Dwaraka, and at least the residents of Vrindavan in Vrindavan and their love for him. Now from Krishna's perspective, Uddhava was hearing directly from Krishna about the nature of those loving feelings. How he, the Supreme Lord, engages in those loving dealings. He's sharing, for example, in the previous verses that although you're omniscient, you act as if bewildered and ask me for advice. Like one incident that's narrated in the 10th canto. So here's the preliminary, and then later the lila is being displayed. So if persons don't read the earlier cantos, they're surely not going to properly understand the lilas. But Krishna's in Dwaraka, and a messenger comes from Hastinapur, where Yudhishthira has invited Krishna to come and preside over a big sacrifice, big festival. And Krishna is very happy. Let's make all arrangements. Let's go at once. And as Krishna is speaking that practically, another messenger comes. A messenger from some kings that say, Jarasandha is harassing the other kings, and what to do? Only you can take care of this. So Krishna turns to Uddhava, what should I do? I've got two invitations. Both are very attractive. What should I do? Uddhava gives his advice. Saying, before this festival for Yudhishthira, all opposing kings should be subdued, and if they're not willing to be subdued, then they should be, battle should be done, they should be, can't have this festival he wants before the situation with this other king is dealt with. Jarasandha is challenging, so the challenge should be met. Very good. Let's go meet the challenger. So at Krishna, as Krishna did like that, we find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also did like that. He asked Ramananda Roy. He asked Haridas Thakur how to properly chant the holy name. He wanted to hear from the mouth of his devotee. He went every day to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit. He wanted Arjuna to be, but Krishna wanted Arjuna to be the one getting the acclaim for destroying the wicked Duryodhana and his clan. Krishna likes his devotees to become honored above himself. Krishna likes that. Krishna wanted Bhishma Dev to pacify Yudhishthira when even he and Vyasadeva couldn't pacify Yudhishthira. Bhishma Dev could do it. Krishna couldn't do it. Krishna wanted Muchukunda to destroy Kaliyavana and get the, to this day, get his name known and his fame known and his glories known for his great devotion for Krishna. Krishna could have destroyed him. Krishna wanted Bhima to destroy Jarasandha. Krishna could have destroyed him. Krishna could create and annihilate unlimited anythings. And Krishna likes, it's the love that Krishna has for the devotees who have love for Krishna. That's what these exchanges of pastimes are. And it's a deep mystery. Certainly it's a mystery to the impersonalists. And he's making the point, here that it's even it's a mystery to those that are mixed in devotion with other intention besides simply love. And how to come to that position? I have studied the path of understanding self-knowledge from my spiritual master, the Personality of Godhead, and thus, after circumambulating him, I have come to this place very much aggrieved due to separation. He heard, and because of that knowledge, as Prabhupada is writing in the purport, it's this clash of moods, separation and meeting. The meeting was carrying out the instruction of the Supreme Lord. And by carrying out the instruction of the Supreme Lord, therein lies the Lord's association. But separation because he has gone. We get that right in the first canto with Arjuna feeling great separation. But then when he starts speaking about Krishna, and even in particular his remembrance of Krishna's instructions on the Kurukshetra battlefield, that he feels revived. And his realization is, Krishna is very kind. By giving these instructions and giving his association ways by which I can remember him, it can mitigate my sense of separation. Krishna is actually with me through his instructions. In the earlier in this canto, when Uddhava is speaking about Krishna in Vrindavan and then Krishna out of Vrindavan, there's a very painful scene where Krishna is speaks to Nanda Maharaj and requests Nanda Maharaj to go back to Vrindavan. Because when Krishna was invited to go to Mathura by Akrura, there's a whole scene. Different literatures, Brihad Bhagavatamrita describes the scene in much more elaborately than it's presented in the Bhagavatam. Akrura wants to know, can Krishna go? There's an invitation. And he doesn't want to disturb the mood of love of Nanda and Jasoda. So he can't say Krishna's mother and father, Vasudeva and Devaki, are in prison. Because they're thinking they're the mother and father. We can't say, oh, they're his mother and father, but, you know, your dear friend Vasudev, he's in prison. And his wife, Devaki, they're very dear to you. And your son has already shown the prowess of taking care of difficult situations. Please send him. And Mother Jasoda doesn't want to say no, but she doesn't want to say yes. So she says, whatever my husband says, I'll accept. And Nanda Maharaj says, well, for my dear friend Vasudev and Devaki, certainly, and I will go too, because it's time for paying my taxes, and I can go to the Bow Festival, and everything will be right because I'll also be there. And Mother Jasoda didn't want to hear him say that. She thought he would get the message. I don't want him to go, but you say it. But he says he can go. So when Krishna went with Akrura, separately, they're going in a royal chariot with horses that are run like the wind, And Nanda Maharaj went with his bullock cart. And also, the implication is obviously it takes longer by bullock cart than royal chariot. It's described in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary that Kamsa thought that a Kura would be like him, materialistic. So it was a new chariot with the finest horses. It's like saying a Rolls Royce is waiting for you. He didn't care at all about a fancy chariot and never been used. But the chariot moved very swiftly, but he didn't get to Mathura until towards the end of the day. And it doesn't take that long. I rode a tunga on purpose just to see how long it would take when you have it riding from the Mathura train station to Vrindavan one time. And it takes a little over an hour. It doesn't take all day. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Akura was in such a state of ecstasy, both in coming and in going back. He was such a state of ecstasy, he didn't even know where he was. He had lost his way. So Nanda Maharaj arrived around the same time that Krishna arrived. So after Krishna went into the Mathura city and saw Kubja, that little exchange, and broke the bow, and some other things happened, he came back out and had his hot milk and bananas and took rest with the residents of Vrindavan. And then after Krishna went and killed the Kovalyapida elephant and Chandra and Mushtaka and finished Kamsa, Nanda Maharaj was still there. So Vasudeva and Devaki, they arranged for Krishna to get his Gayatri initiation, little prince of the Kshatriya standard. Krishna arranged for Ugrasena to be enthroned as the king. Little exchange, he said, you should take the kingdom back. Kamsa imprisoned you. It's your kingdom. Ugrasena said, you're the qualified one. You should be the king. And Krishna said, you're the king. And besides, King Yayati, he made this curse that anybody in the Yadu dynasty shouldn't become king, and so you should become king. Even though Ugrasena was also in the Yadu dynasty. But he didn't argue with him. He just became king. So then it was time for Nanda, some days had passed. And Krishna knew that the residents of Vrindavan were feeling pain of separation. So he sent Nanda Maharaj back, saying, I'll be there in a few days. Send a message to the residents of Vrindavan. I'll come in a few days. Three to seven days. I'll come. Tell Mother Jasoda, I'll come. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes an 8-page commentary on this topic of separation. While what sustained the life of the residents of Vrindavan was Krishna's promise. This is disclosed in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. On Krishna's promise, that was holding their life together, because otherwise they couldn't sustain their life. But Krishna didn't come, so it was separation. And it's the same thing with Uddhava here. Krishna gave him some service. He said he gave some service to Maitreya too. The service to Uddhava is, I entered into this world to give association to my dear devotees, but one place I didn't make it to was Madhurika Ashram, where Nara Narayan and their devotees are. So you please go there as my representative. You've heard everything from me, this Chaturshloki and the whole Uddhava Gita. Everything that you've heard, you go share with them. You're carrying my message to them, so that he could sustain his life by having some service. And Maitreya had some service. Vidura is very soon going to come. You explain everything to him that you heard. But before he goes to Maitreya, that's coming up, he's with Uddhava, because that's who he sees first. And he just gets this whole Krishna Katha session with Uddhava. And note, Uddhava didn't share with Vidura all of what Krishna said. He just said, I learned all of this from Krishna, and now just to sustain my life, I'm going to carry out the instruction that Krishna gave. I'm going to Bhadrikashram. Attachment to Krishna, or in the words of Lord Kapila Dev, attachment to sadhu, which brings attachment to Krishna, is the solution to the material problem. The material problem is attachment to objects of this world in the mood of trying to be the enjoyer of those objects, and madly attached. Foolishly, madly, in the sense of it doesn't make any sense. When you look at it objectively, it doesn't make any sense. It's just pain. It's a setup for misery. If you don't have, you're miserable. If you have, it's going to be taken from you. It's miserable. And while you have it, it's miserable. It doesn't meet your expectations. It's a mix of it's miserable. Especially from the transcendental perspective, where one doesn't even know who one is. The real happiness of the self is abandoned, and something else that's not our happiness is accepted, then it's just miserable. From a, you know, cut and dry perspective, it's miserable. So the Bhagavatam wants to take us to the other side. Kapila Dev says, the very same attachment is just is to be transferred. Don't make it zero. Make it Krishna. Make it sadhu sangha. That's his phrase in that chapter 25 of this canto. Association of saintly persons changes the whole picture from mundane to transcendental, and with that, attachment to Krishna. Now beware, with attachment to Krishna, then there's transcendental emotion. And the transcendental emotion is full. It's not zero. It's full. It's not only one thing. It's all variegatedness. This is the perverted... We experience the perverted reflection of the variegatedness, but the variegatedness is there. And there's meeting and there's separation. It's like that verse that Rupa Goswami has written, references made in Nectar Devotion to the verse. If you at all desire happiness of family life, don't go to Keshika. And because there you'll see this small boy, bluish in complexion, playing upon his flute, and when he plays upon his flute, it'll steal your mind, and you'll have no attraction at all for this material happiness. Don't go there. And that's the material happiness side. But then there's this other flip side of the material happiness side, and that's happiness is making it zero. But spiritual happiness isn't making it zero. Spiritual happiness is there's attachment, and with attachment then there's also separation. Or apparent separation. when Uddhava is speaking to Vidura, he compares Krishna to the sun. Very practical. Sun rises in the morning, and it's midday sun, and the sun sets at night, and there's darkness. So he's saying, by the inexorable time, the sunset of Krishna has taken place, and now the world is cast in darkness. It's the absence of Krishna. But what's the absence of Krishna? It's just from a particular perspective, just like the movements of time. Because somewhere the sun is shining. Somewhere the sun is rising, somewhere it's midday, somewhere it's setting. And Krishna may be gone from this universe, but Krishna is not gone. Like the sun is not gone when it's nightfall. The sun is just out of our view. So there's separation from the sun. But the sun hasn't gone out of existence. The sun doesn't come into existence every morning and go out of existence every night. The sun is shining. But Krishna's existence, similarly, is eternal, and our relationship with Krishna is eternal. But our relationship with Krishna, not just in terms of his pastimes 5,000 years ago, and now here we are much more into Kali Yuga, and we can't experience Krishna's pastimes as those who were present with Krishna did. But Krishna is not absent. Krishna is there in his instructions. And he's there in his remembrance, and he's there in his holy name, and he's there in his deity form, and access every bit as much as when Krishna was present 5,000 years ago, access is available. He makes himself available. Srimad Bhagavatam makes himself available. And who was there during the time of Krishna to explain all the what we're hearing from Srimad Bhagavatam? Maybe Uddhava, or some personalities that could have that depth of understanding. We're so fortunate. We're getting that understanding. And same, attraction for Krishna is being kindled by these messages if one reads them properly, receives them properly. So many other points, but last verse, text 22, reference is made to the sages Nara and Narayana, where they're undergoing penance since time immemorial for the welfare of others. So great souls following the example of Nara Narayan Rishi. What's their purpose of life? It's Tapo Devyam Putra Payena Satvam Shudyed. Rishabh Dev teaches that the human form of life is meant for austerity. Well, that doesn't sound very nice. The human form of life is meant for being happy. We have intelligence and we can make so many things happy. But that's how the greatest happiness, tapo divyam, not pain divyam, but tapo divyam, where the restraint of the mind and senses towards divyam, towards the transcendental realm. That's the purpose of human life. And the purpose of human life is not just for oneself, the purpose of human life is for service unto others. Like Krishna speaks to Balaram about the trees in Vrindavan, how they're this giving of themselves to others and service to others. And this is the sign of a great person. Therefore, I can understand these trees are great personalities. They're just interested in serving others. So, the Bhagavatam is presenting that same message, and just speaking it, and hearing it, and discussing it, and remembering it, and living it, one can enter into the realm of transcendental life. And it's not imagination, it's something one can experience practically. I mentioned this in the car ride from the airport, but I've been watching the DVD of Govardhan Parikrama, because my meditation and getting my knee in shape and doing all those physical therapy things is so I'd be able to do Govardhan Parikrama next fall. So one of the places on Govardhan Parikrama is Uddhavakund. And Uddhavakund, for those of you that have been on Govardhan Parikrama, you'll probably remember, by the time you get to Uddhavakund, your feet are ready to fall off. Because there's a long stretch of just, you know, rough road. Anyway, so Uddhavakund, just before coming to Radhakund, because often the parikrama starts on the other side of Radhakund and come around and end at Radhakund in the evening. So, at Uddhavakund, a wonderful pastime took place where just on the other side of Govardhan Hill is Kusum Sarovar, and on the back side of Kusum Sarovar is a temple for Uddhava. It's a place where Uddhava came and read the message from Krishna to the gopis. And he was so astounded by the love of the gopis, and particularly Srimati Radharani, that he prayed that he could become a blade of grass in Vrindavan, so that the residents of Vrindavan, perhaps even the gopis, could step on him, place their feet on his head, and he would be benedicted by the dust from their feet. But maybe if they wouldn't step on him, at least some of the dust from raised by their feet could land on his head, and he would be benedicted from the dust from their feet. Because if you just asked them, please give me some dust from your feet, they'd be too embarrassed. They wouldn't. It would disturb them. So, at Uddhavakund is where, after Krishna left, the queens in Dwarka, we know from the first canto of Bhagavatam, for a while Arjuna was there and he was assisting them after Krishna had left, but his prowess was completely gone, and even cowherd's men and boys were teasing and harassing the queens, and he couldn't do anything. He was powerless. So those queens, they knew of the love that Krishna had for Vrindavan and the residents of Vrindavan. So they wanted to go to experience Vrindavan. So Vajranav took them, and they came to Uddhavakund, and there they had kirtan. And it was such special kirtan that Uddhava, who had been a blade of grass, manifested himself as Uddhava. And Uddhava, at their request, spoke the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. And it went on for a whole month. There's a mural on the altar where this pastime took place, depicting the pastime. And as Uddhava was speaking the pastimes, it was with such love and such devotion that Krishna appeared and enacted the pastimes that the queens then observed. And the queens entered into those pastimes, and when the pastimes were completed, the Leela describes, they went with Krishna and his eternal roadshow and continued that way. Because there's no description. There's a description of how Krishna left this world. That's the description, at least at Uddhavakund, that you'll hear, how the queens joined Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan through the association of the residents of Vrindavan. By that time, Uddhava, because he by that time had received the full mercy of the residents of Vrindavan. Anyway, it's a nice Govardhan Leela. And the qualification of being able to understand, properly understand, properly appreciate, properly enter into the mood of, what to speak of, enter into the pastimes of, but enter into the mood of love of Krishna, as is described in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's not an ordinary literature. A tape recorder. He received the knowledge and then he presented, according to the questions that Vidura asked, he presents the answers that Vidura asked. And within that is the same message as what Krishna spoke to Uddhava. And other things, because he makes references to other things that he heard from other sources. But you know, the essence of that is what Krishna spoke. Because some of the things, for example, some of the things that Vidura wants to hear, Vidura wants to hear is the process of creation. And that's not described in Uddhava Gita. But the essence is understood. Krishna is the source and so forth. And through Krishna, he empowers others to do. Brahma's role and everything. But the essence is what he heard. Because he's introduced by Uddhava as a friend of Vyas. Vastly, vastly, vastly learned. So one can present as Maitreya is presenting from that body of wisdom that he also, in association with Vyas, came to understand. But then the special part that's presented in Krishna's presentation to Uddhava, this is Paramam Stiti, his supreme position of love in exchange with his loving devotees. That's the special component that is presented. Because he's not on the same level. Yes, also, but he's not on the same level. There's this saying, a bird can fly only as high as his wings carry him. So we're hearing Shukadeva Goswami speak and we're not Shukadeva Goswami. They don't have that capacity. So it's both. Maitreya's capacity is not the same as Shukadeva's, as Uddhava's and Krishna's. And Vidura is not the same as Uddhava, hearing from Krishna. So according to audience, he's speaking. But the essence is there. And that's one of the reasons why it's in the earlier canto and Uddhava Gita is in the later canto. After the whole 10th canto. But the foundation is earlier. Something else?
Yeah.
There's multiple things. There's more things besides what's said here and that one. There's multiple things. In trying to recall where the reference is, but Shankaracharya kept unqualified people away, gave them something, kept them busy. They wouldn't meddle with Krishna. Because if those people, without something to do, they come and meddle with Krishna and muck it up. So, and then another is just to facilitate Kali Yuga. Because in Kali Yuga, people have, so yayatam mam prapadyante, Krishna's making arrangements for people that want to think they're spiritual and they're not. Or something like that. So, the correlation between increasing population, it's, I think I shared this with you, but yeah, Shankaracharya says, or at least the followers of Shankaracharya say, that unless you take sannyas, you can't make any spiritual advancement. So, how many people can take sannyas and properly maintain sannyas, and thus can make proper spiritual advancement? So, what's going to happen with all the rest of those people? They're going to be unregulated. Or maybe, you know, hope that one day they'll take sannyas. And then how properly are they going to do their duties before that? And how properly are they going to follow sannyas? I think I told you this once, but there was, I was flying from Delhi to Hyderabad one time. And it was when the airport was still under construction, so everything was complete chaos, and lines were miserably long, and you know, an hour to check in and an hour to get through security. Everyone's in anxiety because it took so long and all that. So, a longer story, but make it shorter. There was somebody in the line that was just up ahead of me that kept staring at me. I thought, you know, I thought there was something wrong with the way I was dressed or something like that. But he waited for me on the other side and he saved a seat for me and wanted to ask, you know, what are you doing? And he said, I'm heading for Puri for some conference and with my work. And is it true that you can't make any spiritual advancement if you're not a sannyasi? Where'd you hear that? The Sringeri Math, that's what they teach. And I started explaining, you know, Arjuna was a householder. All those kinds of things. Vyasadeva was a householder. Krishna was a householder. And so it's not true. You can't, you have to use that position properly. Not in the sense of proprietorship and enjoyment, but in the sense of service to the Supreme. And just as I was speaking that, you remember me telling you this? That a devotee couple came with their child, yeah, and they're wearing the tilak with their bead bag, and they came right over and paid obeisances, and he's going, wow. I said, you don't really need to talk to me, you need to talk to them. Because they're setting the example of, as householders, spend a little time with them and then you decide whether they've made any spiritual advancement in this life or not. Because of the qualities that they carry, it'll be easy for you to see. Look at their son. You know, he's you know, smile. So, if the message is you can't make any spiritual progress unless you're a sannyasi, how many persons can properly perform that? What do you do? What's going to happen? So indirectly. Then, of course, reestablishing the principle of the Vedas for persons who had accepted Buddhism and had thrown out the Vedas. So to drive Buddhism out of the place and reestablish the authority of the Vedas, and in essence paving the way for the four Sampradayacharyas to come and on the authority of the Vedas establish Vaishnavism. So multiple things. So this is just one something. An emergency measure. Prabhupada's saying. Anything else?